You are tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The following program is a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Showman.
Hi, this is Roy Showman, and welcome once again to Salvation is from the Jews, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the fulfillment, the completion, the full realization of all of the promise and potential of Judaism in the Catholic Church. If you've been with us the last few weeks, you know that I very often have the pleasure of having as a guest on the show another grateful Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church. Notice that I tend to be careful about using the word convert, although it doesn't bother me, and I'm perfectly happy if people refer to me as a Jewish convert, but I can't help thinking that I'm not a convert at all, because if I was Jewish before I knew the Jewish Messiah, Jesus, why did I stop being Jewish by becoming a Jewish follower of the Jewish Messiah? If anything, that should make me more Jewish than ever, and therefore convert seems like a little bit of an odd appellation, so I tend to say Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church. Anyway, true to that pattern, I have today the great pleasure of having another Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church on, who I will introduce in a moment. Let me just, before I do, say that if you have missed some recent shows and would like to listen to them or would like to listen to them again, they are available on the Radio Maria website, which is radiomaria.us, and also on my website, which is salvationisfromthejews.com, where on the homepage I also have a link to the Radio Maria shows, and also lots of other information on Jews in the Catholic Church, on Judaism in general, on the fulfillment of Judaism in the Catholic Church, and so forth. So you might find it interesting to visit Salvation is from the Jews at some point. Anyway, without further ado, let me introduce my new friend, Rob. Are you there, Rob?
I'm here. How are you?
I'm well. I always have this great, you know, pleasure and privilege of having the show and being able to share my joy, and I hope today your joy too in having realized that Judaism is far more than we ever even hoped for before we knew about Jesus. So, but rather than introducing you, why don't I let you introduce yourself?
Sure. Again, my name is Rob, and I was born and raised in New Jersey. My conversion story is about a 12-year process, and somebody reminded me that 12 years and being, you know, 12 disciples and 12 tribes of Israel. I didn't look at it at the time, but it certainly was exciting when somebody brought that to my attention. But I was raised in a Jewish home in New Jersey. Wasn't a very religious home. We did not keep a kosher home. It was more probably what would be a conservative kind of a home. But I did go to a Orthodox synagogue in my town, and I did Hebrew school. I went to Hebrew school and did get my bar mitzvah. And then, of course, after my bar mitzvah, and because I was not from an overly religious home, you kind of fall into that, you know, twice a year Jew, like so many Jews do, with for the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur holidays is when you go to the temple. But my roots, you know, were still Jewish, and my parents, you know, growing up during the Holocaust, even though they weren't practicing all the time, it was still a very important part of their life. And you know, even though they didn't attend regularly like a lot of Jewish people do, it was still very important in my upbringing and in our home.
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
What was the situation, because of course I'm making mental comparisons with my own childhood and upbringing. Was the world your parents lived in a world of fellow Jews? Was the world you lived in mixed or predominantly Jewish? Did your parents have non-Jewish friends? What was that all like?
My parents more or less had more Jewish friends, I think. I mean, my dad lived in a community of mixed people as well as I did, but I believe all their friends were predominantly Jewish, although they did live in mixed neighborhoods as well as where I grew up.
Okay, I didn't mean to derail you.
That's okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So you were bar mitzvahed at 13.
Yes.
And then you became a 2 or 3 day a year Jew, sort of like Christmas, Ash Wednesday, Easter Catholics.
Right.
And so go on from there.
And then I just went on with my life. You know, I went to New York. I graduated from a school in New York with a bachelor's in fine arts and film and television production. And I worked in New York for many years in TV commercial production. Wound up going to LA for a little bit and worked out there. Although, you know, being from the East Coast and from New Jersey and New York area, you know, dealing with the people in Hollywood was a bit of a challenge. But that was back in the mid 80s. And then after, I didn't like it there, so I wound up coming back to the East Coast, and I was dating somebody who was not Jewish. As a matter of fact, I think I only dated one Jewish girl in my entire life. Not that I didn't like them, I just didn't find somebody that would go camping and get their nails dirty and stuff like that. But we'll just move around a little bit. And so I came back from New Jersey, from California, and I did wind up getting married to my girlfriend that I had been dating for about 5 years, and she was from New Jersey also. She was working with the airlines, and she put in for a transfer into Georgia, to Atlanta. And I went down there. Then we wound up getting married. She was a little bit old. She was about 7 years older than me, so she had already been settled in a career, and I was kind of still searching. And it, unfortunately, it only lasted for about 2.5 years, but we had remained friends. We just realized we were better off as best friends because we had been friends for 5 years before we got married. And it lasted about 2.5 years, I was still searching, and I didn't know where I belonged. I certainly wasn't happy living in Georgia, and for various reasons, we just decided to part ways, but we had always remained very close. Shortly after, this was about 1994. We got married in 1986. And we got divorced in 1989. But early 1990, early 90s, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she had to have a mastectomy. And she was clean for a while. In 1994, the cancer came back in her bone, and she wound up passing away in 1998, and it was a very long, slow death for her. But after her death, that's when I really started to question things. My quest to learn more about Christianity really didn't happen until 2000. But when she died, I started to wonder what life was about. And that kind of like planted the seed, although I hadn't started moving forward until early 2000, when another friend of mine had become really sick. And I wanted to, and I had a series of people being sick or dying. My grandmother passed away in 2000. I think a good friend of the family passed away either in 2000 also or in 2001. And a good friend of mine had become sick also with cancer. So I started to get overwhelmed. And that's really when I felt empty inside. I felt I needed something to grab hold of. And the only person how should I say, the only way I started to think was maybe I should explore Christianity and find out who Jesus was. You know, maybe he really was the Messiah. And you know, growing up, I didn't know about all these denominations. I knew Jews and Gentiles. That's about it. You know, and I knew that there was a Jesus and that there was Christmas and Easter. So I didn't know, even though I had non-Jewish friends growing up, I didn't know anything about all these denominations. But when I, during that time, when I just felt empty and I needed something to fulfill that, to fill that, that void, I made a decision to investigate Christianity and Jesus. I wanted to find out who he was. And that was in about, that was the early 2000 or actually later to late 2000. And that's when, once I consciously made that decision to seek him, these things started happening to me physically that I couldn't explain, that I completely knew was divine. And I knew the Lord was getting my attention. For instance, once I consciously made the decision to seek out who Jesus was, I was living near Princeton, New Jersey, and I knew there was a Christian bookstore across from the campus. But prior to that, and these thoughts that I had, I didn't share them with anybody. It was just my own personal thoughts that I think I'm going to go and get a Bible. I never had a regular Bible. As you know, you have a Siddur, maybe a prayer book, and a Haftorah, and a Pentateuch, you know, and Haftorah book. But there's no real New and Old Testament Bible that you would typically find in a Jewish home. So, but once I made a decision to seek him, it might have been a day or two later, I went out to my mailbox, and there was an envelope addressed to me in a plain white, like number 10, like a long envelope, and there was no return address on it. It just had my name, and when I opened it up, the only thing that was inside there was a cross. And I thought that was very strange and eye-opening, because I wasn't a part of any kind of Christian community. I didn't subscribe to any Christian magazines or anything, but it was immediate. After I made that conscious decision to seek the Lord, there was a cross in my mailbox. And I was okay with that. I knew that he was reaching out to me. I didn't really know what to do still, but
so,
I knew.
So when that envelope with the cross appeared in your mailbox, you interpreted it kind of at the moment as a miracle?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I'm just a little surprised that, you know, like growing up, I didn't think miracles still happened, right, growing up Jewish. So I'm just a little bit impressed that you actually had room for miracles.
Oh, yeah, I was totally open to it. And again, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a young kid. I was in my late 30s at that time. And I knew. I mean, I knew it couldn't be a coincidence, you know, because here I am, you know, Jewish all my life, and I've never had anything like that happen before. But it wasn't until I made that conscious effort to seek him that this cross appeared in the envelope, which I still have, and I'm looking at it right now.
Do you think the cross, do you think there was a human agency involved or not?
I don't. Like I said, there was no return address envelope on it. I mean, no return address on the envelope. It had never happened to me before. I guess if you, there could have been.
Oh no, I'm with you on this. Yeah, I'm just trying to place myself in your, you know, in your head and figure.
No,
I never. You know, we're processing this at the time. What's the cross look like? What's it made out of?
It's just this little copper-looking metal cross. You know, it's kind of like flared out on the ends, like you would have seen something like in the medieval times. Or something.
And no corpus.
Like, no corpus. No. Just a bronze, copper-looking cross.
Great.
So I knew he was getting my attention, and he kept getting my attention. And again, I still didn't know what to do with it because, you know, I just I was in my real infancy with Christianity. I hadn't even gotten my Bible yet. But there was a shortly after the cross in the mail, they were predicting a snowstorm, and I was living in an apartment building. And the night before it was supposed to hit, I decided to pull my car away from the building to an area where that was across from the building and still in the parking lot, but it was away from everything, trees and bushes and the building. And I backed my car in just in case I needed to dig myself out the next day. And it did snow. It wasn't a ton of snow, but I guess it was about 6 inches or so. And I had gone out to get my mail, and as I was coming back, I'm walking in the parking lot to the back to the building, and I'm crossing in front of my vehicle from the passenger side, you know, crossing in front of the car towards the driver's side from that right to left, and I see something sticking out of the snow in front of my car, and I'm kind of looking back, and I'm craning my neck because I see what it is, and I can make out what it is, but I just can't believe that it's there. And when I walked up to it, it was indeed a cross made out of ice sticking up in front of my truck in the snow. And I was really excited about it because, you know, I'm like a big kid anyway. My eyes are totally open to still all the possibilities. And I was really excited about it, but I wanted to make sure that I was still dumbfounded that it was there, but, you know, and I wanted to make sure it didn't come from the car. And it was far enough in front of the car that even if it slid off the truck, it would not have been where it was placed. And there was no other signs of ice on the vehicle anyway. So I only wish I had thought of, you know, running back in the house and taking a picture of it. But it was very powerful, and I knew, again, because these things happened, you know, fairly close together, that the Lord was certainly getting my attention. So finally, it was, you know, maybe a week later or so, I finally had a clear day, and it was a nice day that I finally managed to get to this bookstore. And when I went in, as soon as both feet were in, this was the next big sign. As soon as both feet were in the bookstore, I had a surging of energy pouring through me that I can't describe, but it was so powerful. I didn't know what was happening, but it was something surging through me. It was very emotional, very, very powerful. And I must have looked really scared to the woman working there because she asked if I was okay. And I said, no, there's something wrong. Something's happening to me. I don't know what's happening to me. And she asked me something that nobody's ever asked me before. And she asked if I wanted to pray. And normally I probably in my Senegal, New Jersey way, I would have said, are you kidding me? Pray. But because of these things happened, you know, I was totally open to it, and I didn't know what was going on with me. You know, it was very emotional surging of some kind of energy going through me. So she led me to a corner of the bookstore, and she sat me down on this chair, and she kneeled in front of me, and she took my hands, and she said this beautiful prayer, which I wish I could remember, but I just can't remember. And I got my Bible, and I just wanted to get out of the store because I was getting very emotional and I knew I wasn't going to be able to hold it in. And I felt myself just breaking down emotionally. So I grabbed the Bible and I went into my truck and I sat in the parking lot of the bookstore just sobbing for 40 minutes. I couldn't stop it. It was a beautiful day. I was happy. There was nothing upsetting me that day. And it wasn't I didn't feel sad. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know why it was happening, but it was very powerful. And I still get them from time to time. And when it comes, it has to go through its course. I can't make it stop. It just has to work its way through. Depending on how big it is. I mean, there are times it'll happen in church after I take communion, and I'll go back to the pew, and it'll start. And I'm really trying to fight it because I don't want to be a, you know, just blubbering in the pew. But I don't know. I didn't know what it was. I knew it was divine. All my instinct just kept telling me this is divine. This is nothing to be afraid of. I didn't feel it was Satan or anything like that. I knew it was something special that was happening. So that was, I don't know what, that was probably early, around 2001, early 2001, that these things were happening. And then I still was going on with my life. I was still working in New Jersey. And again, a friend of mine was very sick, and she was still going through her battle with cancer at the time. And I remember, and I think now we're either around 2003 or early 2004. I'm thinking it might have been 2003. I had to take a trip into New York City. I don't remember why I was there. But I remember coming back in late afternoon, and I know that you're aware of Manhattan and how busy it is in Penn Station. Late afternoon in New York, Penn Station, the trains are usually very crowded. And I remember coming out of, going down in the platform and onto the train. I walked into a completely empty rail car, which instinctively I knew was very bizarre because of the time of day. And I thought, this is really strange that this rail car is completely empty. So I was about the second row in from the door. And on one side of the train, you have a bench seat for three on the left side, and on the right side, you have a bench seat for two. So I was about the second row in on the left side in this bench seat for three, and I kind of slid in, and I'm just gazing out the window, you know, and I'm wondering, you know, this is just so weird. But I'm kind of just with my thoughts, and I'm gazing out onto the platform, which is dark and dingy and, you know, kind of ominous in Penn Station. And a moment later, the door opens up to this rail car, and out of my peripheral vision, I see an image, you know, I see a shape, you know, I'm not looking, but I know somebody walked in. And this person sits in my row. And without looking at him, I remember thinking, you got to be kidding me, right? This whole rail car is empty, completely empty, 60 feet or however long they are, of nothing but air and empty seats. And this person was sitting next to me. And I didn't pay him any attention. I just kept staring out the window. And a few moments pass, and he spoke. And he said, and I'll never forget this because his voice was just something I'll never forget. It was a very, very commanding but very soothing voice. And he said, I've never seen this train so empty. And without looking at him, I'm still gazing out the window, you know, kind of, or maybe at a 45-degree angle, looking up towards the ceiling of the rail car. I said, yeah, it's very bizarre. I've never experienced this before, that this train is so empty. And by the way, nobody ever came into that rail car. So I go back to gazing out the window, and we start to go. And we come, for those who don't know, When you leave New York to go back into New Jersey, you go into a tunnel and you go under the Hudson River and you come up into New Jersey. So as we're coming out of the tunnel, which I now think about coming out of the darkness into the light. Again, it was a beautiful day, and he spoke again, and he mentioned that he just mentioned, it's a real beautiful day, isn't it? And again, I'm not paying this guy any attention. I'm still looking out the window and saying, yeah, it really is a beautiful day. But I just couldn't understand why he was sitting there for the, you know, in the first place, and who he was and why nobody else came into the rail car. So I don't know how much time after we came out of the tunnel, he decided to get up and move into the row in front of me. And I remember thinking, why didn't you just sit there to begin with, in my cynical New Jersey way? But I was able to see him from behind, and he had like this muted jacket on, like a green, like an olive green looking kind of a jacket, and he had long brown hair, you know, past his shoulders a little bit. And the first stop coming out of New York on New Jersey Transit is Newark Penn Station in New Jersey. When we pulled in, he got up to leave, but he didn't leave. He opened the door as if he was going to step out onto that rail car platform, but he didn't step out. He turned to look at me. And at that moment, I saw who he was, and who was standing before me still sends goosebumps, you know, up and down my body, because the Lord was standing in front of me. And I couldn't speak. If somebody had asked me a question, my heart was racing, my mouth had dropped open. There he was, in whatever image you have in your mind, or from pictures that you might have seen, from paintings or movies. He had the full beard, he had the piercing eyes, and the long brownish hair. And he didn't speak, but he wanted me to see who he was. And shortly after that, he was gone. And I was dumbfounded. I was absolutely paralyzed. I was just frozen dead in the seat. And, you know, at some point I was trying to look out the window to see if I could see him actually get off the train, which I never saw him get off the train. And it was just the most unbelievable experience that I've ever had. But I'm thinking to myself, did I just see who I thought I saw? And your mind starts to play games with you. And I'm sitting there gathering my thoughts, you might have had a different experience. I know that you had your experience on the beach. But when there's a presence like that in front of you, and if your heart is open and you believe, you know that there's no question. There was no question in my mind who was standing before me. But yet I'm wondering, who am I going to tell this story to? And there was only one person I can think of that I could mention this to that you might not think I'm crazy. And he was a good friend of mine who was at the time, he was a director of media ministries at the First Baptist Church in Ocala.
Yeah. Let me interrupt you for a moment there. This is Roy Shulman, your host. The show is Salvation is from the Jews on Radio Maria. We're speaking with a guest, a new friend of mine. His name is Rob. He's also a Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church. So picking up from there, Rob, I did have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Just before we broke, you mentioned that as Jesus was leaving the otherwise empty train car, just you and him in that train car, even though it was close to rush hour, when he reached the door, he turned around and met your gaze. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, most of us have not had the privilege or the pleasure of a face-to-face encounter with Jesus. So anything you can tell us about the expression in his eyes, what he was communicating in his look to you and so forth?
Well, his gaze was, it was very piercing. It was almost like he was looking through me. But he had these, but I won't forget his eyes. They were like these bluish-green eyes. And it was, he didn't have to say anything. He was telling me, I'm here. You know, that's really what I was getting from it. It was, I don't even remember how long he stood there. I mean, it seemed like it was for quite some time as far as when you're gazing upon an image like that of the Lord. It could have been, you know, seconds, but it seemed like it went on for quite a bit. And I really just think he was telling me, he was showing me that he is there. I went to seek him and he is there. And by the way, just as a side note, nobody ever came into that train. And I was going back to Princeton Junction. That's like an hour train ride. Nobody ever came into that rail car the entire trip. But, Yeah, I just felt that he was letting me know that he is there, and I felt that he did have a plan for me. It didn't still happen right away, but again, I needed to validate this to somebody, and I did put in this call to my friend who worked at the First Baptist Church in Ocala, and I prefaced it by telling him that something extraordinary just happened to me, and please tell me if I'm crazy, you won't hurt my feelings, tell me I need to be institutionalized or whatever. So I told him the story, and he said, I believe everything that you just told me. I said, really? He said, I believe that when things are good, angels, saints, Jesus himself can come down. I believe when things are bad in people's lives that you can still get a visitor like that. And I believe everything that you just told me. And I felt a lot better because I trust him. I still didn't know what I was to do with it. And it still took another 8 years for me to come into the church from that experience. But I knew he was leading me, and it was a long journey. Subsequently, from that, I wound up, from that experience, and just going on with my life, I was doing some post-production sound work in New Jersey at that time, and I decided to make another career change into aviation. And again, this encounter was either it was 2003 or very early 2004. But shortly after that, I made a decision to become a pilot, and with hopefully landing a job at the airlines. So I had sold off a good portion of my equipment and the little business that I had up there, and I came to Florida to do a lot of my flight training. And I met this, one of my instructors was an older gentleman named Dan, and because I was older when I decided to go on this quest to become a pilot, we would strike up a conversation. We didn't really become friendly. This was initially, I came down here mid 2004 till the end of 2005, and I didn't make it up to the airlines in early 2006. I was stationed. I was based in Georgia, and again, I'm just going on with my life. I had always still felt the presence that the Lord was leading me somewhere. I still didn't know really how to fully tap into it. I was still learning about Christianity. You know, I had, like I said earlier, I did buy my Bible, and the first place I turned to learn about Jesus was Matthew. But I did start looking through the Bible more and reading certain things, and as my journey progressed forward. But I still didn't know what to do with it. But then in 2008, you know, I had been with the airlines in Georgia. I decided I didn't want to live in Georgia anymore, and I decided to come back to Florida, to Vero Beach. And that's really when things started to move forward, because I reconnected with this older gentleman who was still at the time teaching at this flight school. And I knew he was curious as to what faith I was. Without really coming out and asking, he would start to bring up, you know, faith-based conversation, and I never would engage. Those, like you hear people talk about two types of conversations that you don't really participate in is politics and religion. And because I had my share of anti-Semitism growing up, I kind of just shied away from conversation. But, and he was never pushy. He was a very gentle guy. But one day he brought up something, and I had somewhat of a decent knowledge of the Bible at that time, and I started to engage him. And finally, I just told him that I was Jewish. And we started to compare things. But in the meantime, I had started going to a Protestant church. Somebody invited me. I knew the Lord was still calling me, and I was still open to it. And I started going to this Protestant church here. I'm not exactly sure. Well, it was probably around 2011. But in the meantime, from between commuting, you know, going flying up to Atlanta and flying my trips and coming back, I had been engaging in conversation with this gentleman from time to time. And I was more and more comfortable discussing it with him as we compared, you know, our notes as far as what I can remember from my Jewish history and about Judaism to Christianity. But I had started going to a Protestant church, and I don't know how long I was there for. It was quite a while, but I knew that instinctively something was missing for me, and I'm not by any means judging the people that worship in the Protestant churches. I didn't like the music. The preachers can be very uplifting. They're very talented. But the music, because I guess from my Jewish roots, growing up in an Orthodox synagogue where you had a curtain separating the men from the women, you go there to pray. You know, synagogues, you pray. Everything is prayer. And so I wasn't liking the music, so I found myself going later and later, so I didn't have to listen to the music. So finally, I would just show up when I knew the preacher was going to come out. I would find myself looking at the instruments. What is that? A Fender bass? What kind of amp is that? You know, I was not interested in the music at all. So I took a step back. I started to reevaluate. Okay, why am I not liking this? But prior to that, you know, or I guess around the same time, as I was reevaluating what I didn't like about being in the Protestant church, this person Dan had asked me if I wanted to go to a mass with him. Now, I don't know how many people, even in the Catholic Church, understand what this particular mass, unbeknownst to me, was a healing mass. And I guess for your first mass, you may not want to go to a healing mass if anybody out there is curious, because it's a different type of a mass. But the funny thing was, he asked me to go, and I have to back up a little bit because when I was seeing somebody in Atlanta when I was up there, and I decided to move to down here, we still had this relationship going, and in 2011, I was going to move back up there, and I was half moved up there, and as relationships do, at times they fall apart. So this relationship fell apart, and I wound up staying in Vero, which I think was also planned, because that first mass that I was invited to go to, when I walked into the church, Dan had continued to walk into the pew, and I was still standing at the door. And when I walked in, because it's part of the healing mass has some charismatic music, and they project, you know, different things on a screen and words and whatnot and photographs. But when I walked in, there was a charcoal looking black and white, not even a photograph. It was like a charcoal sketch of Jesus. That was the first thing that I saw when I walked in, was this projection of Jesus. And I stopped dead in my tracks, and Dan's walking, and he turns around, and he sees me still standing at the door. And he said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "That's the person I saw on the train all those years later." And I was so fixated on this image. I couldn't take my eyes off the image. It was, you know, just a remarkable image, seeing this picture that was so closely resembled who was on the train, that I knew that there was a reason why now I wasn't going up to Atlanta. So I get through this mass, and I didn't understand it, you know, certainly the healing part of it, but there was a comfort there that I wasn't get, that I hadn't felt in the Protestant church. But yet I still didn't know where I belonged, so I still kept going to the Protestant church, even though I knew that there was something missing. Instinctively, I knew I was getting some truth. I didn't feel I was getting a lot of the truth. So I'd go to the Protestant church, and then I would sit in on a mass. And this was my life for a little while, until one day I was sitting in the back of the church, sitting in on this mass, and then the light bulb went off. I totally understood what was going on, and not so much what the order of the mass was, but I realized that it was just like being in a synagogue, except there's Jesus in the tabernacle instead of the Torah that you would see in the Ark in a synagogue. And again, I still didn't understand what was going on in the mass. I knew that it made sense. I knew you had the readings. I understood the readings of the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Gospel. But the parallels from being in a synagogue to being in the Catholic Church was stunning to me. You know, even with the procession down the center aisle, a lot of times you'll get a procession in the synagogue too, where they're carrying the Torah, and they place it in the Ark on the Bima, which for people who don't know is like a little stage that you step up and, you know, where the podiums are and their version of an altar, I guess. And in the Catholic Church, you have the tabernacle. The constant prayer and the standing and sitting, which is typical that you would find in a synagogue also, there was so much comfort. There was so much that I saw even in that early stage of my learning, that there was a lot of similarities between the mass and being in a synagogue. Then this friend Dan told me about this RCIA program, and he brought me to a house for a meeting for some of the people who are going to be administering RCIA in the fall of 2011. So I got to meet some people. It was just like an informal get together at somebody's house. I then went over the schedule and how it was going to be presented and administered. But I wasn't ready. I was still taking baby steps. And he would remind me, you know, RCIA is starting. This was like September 20 something in 2011. I said, okay, you know, and I wound up missing the first 7 weeks. The eighth week he asked me again, just to remind me, you know, there's an RCIA tonight if you're interested in coming. Well, at that point, I decided, okay, let me see what this RCIA is all about. And I went. And from that first night, I never left. And I wound up coming into the church on Easter Vigil 2012, which coincidentally fell the same time as Passover, and it was funny because the week before my parents called and asked if I can come up for Passover, and I explained to them that I had something I had to do that Saturday night, but I would come up on Sunday. So Easter Vigil 2011, I came into the church, and the next day I went up and celebrated Passover with my family.
Wow. Do you have a sense, you mentioned earlier of having a strong sense that he had a plan for you, that Jesus had a plan for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that this is the plan for you, or do you feel that this is a part of the plan for you, but there's still more yet to unfold?
Oh, there's definitely more to unfold. And I realized that had I made that move to Atlanta, I probably would not be in the church right now. So I believe it was all, this was the way it was supposed to happen for me. You know, that relationship completely fell apart at the last minute. And by October something of that same year, 2011, I was going into RCIA and while I'm coming into church. Now, no, I know that there's more because I still get these surges, and they come out of nowhere. And I can be just sitting quietly, and I'll get these surges that I had in that bookstore, and it brings me to my knees, I find myself just crying out to him, what is it? You know, I know without any doubt that there is something specific I'm supposed to be doing. And that's been what has been kind of gnawing at me for most of this time now that I'm in the church. I mean, I knew he had something going on for me along this whole journey, but I know that there's more.
It sounds like the picture you're painting is that this is still in some sense a preparatory stage, and that you have some specific vocation, some specific task to fulfill in the church or for the church that you're still being prepared for.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, I do have one of the deacons at the church. I asked if they would be a spiritual director for me because I didn't want to come into the church and then just say, okay, I'm in the church, and then not do anything. So I meet with him, you know, once a month or so, and, you know, just to keep myself focused, because I've already been tested. I've already been, I don't want to say tested, but, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Scott Hahn. Who was a militant, you know, Protestant against the Catholic Church. I mean, he was a Presbyterian minister who wound up converting to Catholicism, and his story is really remarkable as well. But he had a book called Rome Sweet Home that I read, and it was a very emotional book for me because everything that he didn't understand about Catholicism. And this guy was brilliant, and he still is. Matter of fact, I just spent last Saturday in a conference with him when he was doing the speech on the new evangelization. But everything he rejected and didn't understand about the Catholic Church made complete and total sense to me. And I got upset. I had already come into the church, and I was actually upset after reading his book, because I felt that I wasn't worthy to be here. I didn't have any of his knowledge on scripture and theology. But the simple things that he couldn't understand just made total sense to me. So I felt like I didn't belong. I didn't understand why the Lord led me into the church without having any knowledge of anything. And I started to feel guilty. I started to feel like I didn't belong. So I met with my deacon, and he kind of calmed me down and said, look, the knowledge will come. Just focus on the spiritual. Mm-hmm. And don't worry that you don't know everything and that you can't quote scripture from page to page, chapter to chapter. Just the Lord wanted you here. He led you here. And you're no different from any other of his disciples. You know, the original 12, what, you know, they didn't know much of anything, you know, but it'll come. Mm-hmm. So
now
it's been a great journey.
You said something which seems to me to be an allusion to the fact, that's allusion, not illusion, thank God,
mm-hmm.
allusion to the fact that you receive some what's called in Catholic circles sensible consolation from communion, that when you go to Mass or when you receive communion, you actually feel something from receiving communion. Is that correct?
Yes, and it's not all the time, but there are quite often I'll go back to the pew and I'll start sobbing. And I obviously it's the Spirit working through me, or Jesus Himself at that point. I'm not sure, but it's.
Do you feel warmth? Do you feel love? Do you feel peace?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
well, I'm saying this because I don't want to say I feel sorry for, but you know there are thousands of cradle faithful Catholics out there, mm-hmm. who, you know, God didn't have to use extraordinary means to make them into faithful Catholics, and so they don't mm-hmm. receive these consolations. Mm-hmm. I know that we're very privileged in some sense as converts into the Church, because sometimes, you know, God does have to do this, or for His mysterious reasons chooses to do this. You know, as St. Paul said, Jews require signs. So I just wanted you to share a little bit about that so that they, to kind of, confirm them in their faith should they not receive any sensible consolation from Mass or from Communion.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know how many people experience these things. I think you really have to be open to your faith. And like Judaism, you're told what to do when you're younger. You're told you're going to go to Sunday school. You're told you're going to go to Hebrew school. You're told you're going to get bar mitzvah. You don't really fully understand why you're doing all this. And I think it's the same for Catholics or even any denomination of Christianity. But I can tell the cradle Catholics that to encourage them to really rediscover their faith, because it is an awesome faith. The history, Catholics don't read the Bible a lot anyway, although they probably are doing it more than they used to. But if you go into the history of the Church and kind of, close the Bible every once in a while, go back 2,000 years to the early fathers, the writings, whether it's and whether it's the Western fathers, Ignatius and Polycarp and Smyrna, Scott Hahn turned me on to the Syriac Church fathers of the Orthodox Church, and I'm discovering tons of articles written. The history of the Church is just so beautiful, but that's where I centered my questioning, because when I was coming into the Church and I was taking baby steps because I knew it was going to be a big thing, I wanted to know where the Church came up with all this stuff. I wanted to know where these doctrines came from and the dogmas and why they teach what they teach. And you really need everything. You cannot just use the Bible. You have to go back into history. You have to do the research. You have to do the reading to see how it all just fits together and how Judaism is so closely tied into the Catholic faith.
Wow. Well, I hate to bring this to an end, but I have to, because the hour is pretty close to over. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you to kind of leave us with some last words. I think you did a pretty good job of leaving us with a very beautiful kind of, wrap up summary. I don't know if there's anything that you'd like to add at this point.
No, I would encourage, Jews that might be considering, looking, if they're searching, to open up a dialogue, if they know any Catholic people, if they feel that there might be something else. I mean, you don't want to beat people over the head with the Bible, but it's hard to evangelize Jewish people. I realize that, but I know that there has to be other people out there, like maybe that didn't have the experiences that I had, but are still searching, that if they know anybody, to open up a dialogue. And I would encourage the cradle Catholics too, to really get back to your faith, and you'll find that you're blessed to be who you are.
Amen. Now, you say open up a dialogue with Catholics, but I also suggest that if there are any Jews out there who might be wondering, they should open up a dialogue with that Jewish Catholic who you had a personal dialogue with, that is Jesus, and simply mm-hmm. ask him, simply simply in your heart or out loud say, Jesus, are you really the Jewish Messiah? You know, are you really who they say you are? If so, let me know. Because that's all you have to do, because he's just waiting for our permission. He
won't
force himself on us. But should we be honestly seeking him and open to hearing the truth, as apparently you were, he may not appear, you know, on the commuter train, but one way or another, he'll make his presence felt to us. And we'll know the truth, because really that's the business he's in. He's just waiting for us to ask. And the other side of that coin, which came out very beautifully in your witness testimony, is again, it's in St. Paul. How will they know if they're not told? You know, how will people hear if they're not preached to? You know, I fervently exhort Catholics, you know, not to beat anyone over the head, but just share your faith. Just be open with friends, even fallen away Catholic friends, certainly Jewish friends, just about, you know, why you go to Mass, not because you have to, but because you like to, why you, you know, have a relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary, or why you pray the rosary, or why you feel that God is in charge of everything, and you feel peaceful in adversity, or whatever. Whatever it is going on in your heart, just share your faith and what it's doing to you, within you. And that's not beating anyone over the head, but they'll hear the truth of what you're saying. And it will be, as Walt Whitman said, an itch in their ear that won't go away. Anyway, I'm sorry to end this, but I have to. Thank you very much, Rob, for joining us today. Maybe we'll have the pleasure of continuing this conversation later. And I want to thank our listeners. Thank you. You've been listening to Salvation is from the Jews on Radio Maria. This is your host, Roy Shoman, and I hope you join us again next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.